Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. And now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, photos, videos, arguments, other stuff at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, Melody Lauer.
Hi.
Hey, that was English.
Yeah, see, I haven't done English yet.
Well,
I mean,
I have,
but like not in this series. So I figured I could pull English out and it would not be a repeat.
How's your arm?
It still hurts. Thank you for asking, though.
Because last week actually happened 40 minutes ago.
Are we time traveling?
We are always time traveling these days. Hey, guess what?
What's up?
This segment brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. Whether there was a firefight or you do, in fact, want to worry about that little guy, you need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition at LuckyGunner.com. With a shipping department that's always moving at 88 miles per hour, if I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. And remember, unless you're on fire or drowning or something else I haven't thought of, you can never really have too much ammo. So I am super excited because we are joined today by Bill Blowers, who is one of the instructors that I most want to go train with and haven't had the opportunity to yet, but I get to talk to him on the show, so that's something. So, Bill, how's it going, man?
Great, great, great. How's it going with you guys?
Oh, can't complain. Life is good.
Yeah, man, life is great. I appreciate you guys having me on the show.
No, I appreciate you. Well, you kind of struck me as a type that would be up stupid early anyway. I mean, just guessing.
Yeah, you did not wake me up. That's for sure.
No, I didn't think I did. We set this up pretty last minute, and I'm like, it's going to be like 6:45, 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and you're like, that's fine. I'm like, yeah, I figured. You strike me as like the 0500. Okay, I'm going to go run a couple miles and think about going to the gym later. Types.
But that's not, yeah, not 05 is crazy. I mean, that's just crazy talk. For some reason, man, I usually wake up between 6 and 6:30. I don't set a clock or anything. I get up at that time. And you're right. I mean, I want to get my PT on, get the day cracking, all that kind of a thing.
I have a 3-year-old, so that's why I get up between that. I don't know why it happens. I don't set an alarm or anything. But for those that don't know, man, who are you? What do you do? And we'll hop right in.
Okay. I'm Bill Blowers. I'm own Taprack Tactical, which is a training company. Primary focus has been on police and SWAT operations, SWAT tactics, that kind of a thing. As a young guy, I went to college for about a minute, decided I didn't like it, so I joined the Army, did that for about 6 years. And then, you know, as a young guy coming up, I always thought I wanted to be a police officer. Job intrigued me, obviously, all the action shows from the 70s when I grew up, that kind of thing. So anyway, joined the military, went in for 4 years, got married during that time to my sweetie, the same gal I'm married to now. Got pregnant with the first child right as I was getting out, so I re-enlisted for 3 more. That was right during the first Gulf War, toward the end of my term was toward the or at the start of the first Gulf War, rather. Army said, hey, when that was completed, if you want to get out, you can basically resign from the military. So I had re-enlisted to come back home here in Washington State. Started testing for cop jobs, got lucky, got hired, went in, talked top, and 2 weeks later I was out of the Army and working for a small police department. Stayed there for about 18 months. Good department, certainly a good place for me to start. You know, was not upset with the organization or anything like that, but I just wanted just something more. And so I started testing for larger organizations in the area. I ended up getting hired by the Kent Police Department, which is a suburb of Seattle, and they had everything I wanted there, to include SWAT. And so moved up there and stayed there stayed a cop for 25 and a half years, roughly. And I retired last February. The training business, I started that in end of 2006, 2007, and have been doing it ever since. And it was just SWAT tactics and, you know, basic SWAT school, hostage rescue school, team leader school, that kind of thing. And then that dovetailed into firearms classes for cops, obviously. And so I was going to different cop ranges and started doing, you know, pistol, rifle stuff. And actually, the first class I started teaching on the firearm side was all automatic weapon stuff, because then, early 90s, came on the SWAT team in 95. But anyway, at that time, there was only one guy teaching auto guns. And so I got an instructor cert in that and thought, man, I think I can do a better job, particularly on the AR platform. And so the first class was MP5s and automatics, and, you know, Colt Commandos, which was the gun du jour back then before we had all the options we have today.
Right.
And that's basically it, man. So that's kind of me in a nutshell. And, you know, I don't know if you want more info or not.
No, I mean, I like letting people go and see where they end up with it. I have to say, you are it's funny to me, you know, as I became aware of you like probably a year or so ago. I don't remember exactly, but, you know, and I've been super impressed with kind of the dedication to excellence is sort of or the habit of excellence almost like the, you know, I've seen you post some shooting stuff and we featured one of the drills that you came up with in the Lucky Gunner.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Appreciate you guys doing that.
No, it was a cool drill and it was difficult and I did not pass. And I like stuff like that because it seems like there's this big movement. And I, you know, at least in some circles recently to, for lack of a better term, sort of make excuses for sucking. And when I run into people that are like, no, we should be good at this. And it's not saying that, you know, doing well at a qual or a drill is no indication of anything other than you were able to perform a mechanical, you know, skill well under relatively little pressure, right? I'm not trying to ascribe any, oh, if you do good at this, you're going to crush somebody in a gunfight. That's not what I'm saying. But, you know, being good for good's sake, goodness' sake? Wait, this is a Christmas carol now. It just seems like something that not a lot of people are talking about anymore. And I was kind of curious to get your thoughts on that. What drives that?
You know, man, it's I was very fortunate in a lot of things coming up. I think that, you know, my dad was a career military guy, spent 32 years in the Army. And, you know, I remember growing up and my entire life, my dad was a sergeant major, essentially, from the time that I can remember. And why is that important? Well, my dad was a command sergeant major with 17 years in the Army. So he's kind of moving up there pretty quickly. And then he stays in for another 15 years, you know, at that rank, and obviously different, you know, levels of command sergeant major once you make that rank. I don't know if you know anything about military ranks, but the dude always, I guess, kind of drove us, right? And I remember I don't remember my dad being sick. I don't remember him not going to work ever. So there's that piece on the, you know, as young men, me and my brother, you know, my dad demanded that we, obviously he demanded the grades, which I did not achieve, by the way. That was the one let down and disappointment in my dad's eyes was I was not a good student. But me and my brother always involved in athletics, and my dad would push us in that regard. And I don't mean like a weird, you know, after school movie with the, you know, the mean dad pushing the kids kind of a deal, but just, you know, a very motivating guy. And hey, man, if you're going to do it, then put effort into it. If you're going to be involved in sports, then be the best that you can be at them with no preconditions that we do anything, you know, ridiculous, whatever the heck kind of a thing. But with that, my brother ended up playing pro baseball for 9 years. So, you know, there's something there, I guess. And then, so I had that home influence when I went in the Army. Again, very fortunate, went to 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment in Germany. And this is when the border was still up prior to the fall of the wall, that kind of deal.
Right.
And so I remember when I got to that unit, it was very different than the unit that I came from at Fort Knox, which was an Op 4 unit teaching new officers how to be officers. And it's not that the NCOs in that unit were terrible or anything, but there was just a different focus. And I think the cluster of NCOs that were in the platoon that I was assigned to, just were very, very dedicated dudes to the task. And with that, they forced me to be as well. And so I think that's kind of opened my eyes to achieving excellence and trying to surpass the minimum standard. And, you know, this, whatever the heck this organization requires, this thing, well, that's meant for every, you know, dude within this organization. And yeah, I think I can do better than that kind of philosophy. And so I think it got ingrained. And then, excuse me, when I became a copper here at the organization I just left, and focus was trying to be on SWAT. Right? I mean, I wanted to do that job. I just thought it was very interesting, and you know, for a lot of reasons, and probably a lot of reasons people don't necessarily think of, which would, you know, the camaraderie piece, the guys that are dedicated to excellence, the you know, the close knit group of fellows that are all trying to achieve higher and higher standards. That is the part that was interesting to me, and that's exactly what I got. And one of my early mentors on SWAT was a dude that, I mean, just was really, really good at this job. And I mean, he was a good shooter, but I think his focus was on the tactics and let's do things smartly and let's try to do things properly. You know, and I guess kind of paved the way for me a little bit and maybe changed my perspective a little bit too, right? I mean, I mean, his big deal, I remember the first officer-involved shooting.
Well, let me pause you right there because we got to go to break. So hold that thought. We'll pick up right where we're at. We're talking with Bill Blowers. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977, a legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the new EDC-X9, which offers discriminating shooters 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics, and concealability with modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. I broke my streak. I haven't messed that ad up in many episodes, and here we are. I kind of feel bad. So anyway, Bill, right before the break, you were talking about what sort of shaped you, and then I had to pause you, and you were getting ready to talk about an officer-involved shooting, and I apologize. So please continue.
Yeah, no worries, man. I tend to rattle a little bit too, so if you got to put the hook on me, by all means.
Oh, I will. Don't.
Anyway,
don't worry.
So we had this first officer-involved shooting, and obviously was, you know, it's not like every time SWAT deploys we're getting into all kind of massive shootouts and crazy stuff. So it took a little while, and my recollection is I believe that I was it was very early into me being a team leader. So, I mean, I kind of had worked along for about 6 years, and we had not had an officer-involved shooting. I think partially because the tactics were being employed very effectively. What we were doing was prohibiting that. Certainly had plenty of dudes with means and opportunity. In fact, I remember hitting the head of a hallway and seeing a guy with a lever-action rifle and coming, starting to bring the gun up, and then he dropped it. So, you know, things had been – some close calls had occurred.
Right.
So this one pops off, and you know, the guys do what they have to do, and I think that the team performs very well. I learned a lot about being a team leader in that type of incident. But one of the dudes, and this, you know, was not meant to be nefarious or anything along that line, but he made the comment as we were clearing that something to the effect, I guess we're a real team now, or something to that effect. And this old mentor kind of jumped on him and said, "We did everything previous to this made us a real team. Mm-hmm. This was a fail today."
Yeah.
And I remember kind of looking at him going, "What the hell are you talking about, man? The guys did, you know, this guy chose the outcome of this thing. It was his decision, you know, to go to guns and force the guys to do what they needed to do." And his point was, man, could we have, you know, approached this from a different route or used different tactics or done something different using our brains that potentially took that opportunity away from him? And then the only opportunity he had left was surrender. And if the answer to that is yes, then we screwed up today.
Right.
And I remember reviewing that for like 2 weeks in my head because I was the dude in charge and thinking, man, did I force this? Was there something we could have done different? And when I say that, you know what I mean? I mean, the dude, everybody gets to pick, right? Humans have the opportunity to do whatever they want to do. But I did roll that around in my head and you know, what if we would have done this? What if we would have done this? Would have changed the outcome? And the answer is I'll never know, obviously, because the guy is now deceased. But I think that type of thinking and forcing the tactics excellence, let's be good at this part of the job, which will prevent us from having to do that other part of the job, helps drive me as well. And certainly that's how my team leader class is built. What it's built around. Think about what your actions, the repercussions of all your actions, that kind of thing.
Right.
Well, answer your question at all, man.
No, it does. Dude, honestly, and I'm, you know, we're 6 years into this and I'm desperately hoping that no one figures out that all I'm doing is asking people random questions to fill up 42 minutes of airtime. So you talk about whatever you want, man. And
you got it.
Now you tell me.
Oh, God. I mean, I think they might have noticed by now. I don't know. But so you said something there, and this is really tangential, but and I don't think a lot of people understand this. At least a lot of the anti-cop people don't. But how out of your way most coppers I know or have met go to not shoot somebody, even to the and when we start talking about shooting someone, I've always kind of liked the distinction between can, should, must. Like, can you do it legally? Should you do it? And must you do it? And the number, I'd like to get your opinion on this, but like the number of dudes that legally could have been filled in that weren't, because that's not what most cops are looking for. Do you think a lot of people sort of lose sight of that? And the reason I bring it up is because you're talking about like how you're beating yourself up over an event where, you know, could I have used better tactics to make sure this guy didn't have the opportunity to force us to do that? That's not what most people picture when they start talking about this stuff.
Right. Yeah. You know, man, any cop, well, you know, you get a cop that retires after 20, and you know, the crap from, you know, way back, well, most cops will go their whole career of never pulling their gun. That is a load of horse crap. I mean, my guns were coming out a lot in 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the reason for that is, you know, I'm trying to intimidate somebody into compliance.
Mm-hmm.
And some people just don't care, right? I mean, they just don't care that you got a gun pointed at them, and so you get that. Within that, if you talk to any cop, he will give you a minimum of 5 or 6 stories about a time that he could have legally done it, right? Probably should have legally done it. But just elected on that must part that you were talking about, must you do it at this moment in time? And he didn't get there. And sometimes to his own demise, sometimes putting himself in greater peril.
Yep.
Because he doesn't want to pull the trigger. And people say, well, that's, you don't want to go through the, you know, our process is pretty lengthy. Officer involved shooting, you know, post shoot and what you got to go through. You don't want to go through that. No, dude, that is not it. Because by and large, 99.9% of cops are good humans, and taking a human life is a very serious event for everybody, regardless of your religious backgrounds, beliefs, whatever. They're good humans that are trying to help people, help their community, and so it's a hard bridge to cross. I mean, pragmatically, I could look at it and say, well, you know, there are certainly every single criminal that I've ever seen get shot by my team, without question, fulfilled all of the requirements that you detailed at the start of this question.
Yeah,
and that's the stuff that makes you go to bed and be able to put your head on the pillow and say, I'm good to go. You know,
yeah.
And let me get some sleep and get up for PT tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, and it's just the only reason I bring it up is because there's a lot of, you know, not that the people that complain about that are likely to listen, but in case they do, like understanding, like most. Most of the dudes I know associate with, and I associate with a lot of different, like, that's just part of my job, are so far removed from what the popular narrative is there. But anyway, getting more back on topic. So as far as, like, the practice of excellence or the habit of excellence and sort of where that came from for you, but what do you think the importance is? I mean, you know, tactically you sort of covered it, but as far as, like, even in the physical skills and manipulations, what do you think that nets people? I mean, why is it worth the time to not suck, I guess?
Well, so, you know, it's funny. I just finished a class in Colorado, and taught, there was, that class was full of some hard shooting dudes, man. It's probably the biggest depth pool biggest class with depth that I've had in a long time. I mean, everybody on the line could throw down with that. With the pistol. And so we talked a little bit about that. And my big deal is accuracy done quickly. And everybody's, you know, well, there's balance of speed and accuracy, there's speed versus, you know, that whole debate. And I kind of, the pursuit of excellence to me is it's habit forming, number one, right? Once you start down that path, I think it just becomes part of your life. And the physical fitness piece. I mean, I'm an older dude here, and I'm just trying to, you know, was on a team of young guys, and they always seemed to be younger than me. And particularly as I got older, it was amazing. But I did not want to be the TL that pencil whips his PT test. Did not want to be the guy that the team leader that's barely meeting standards on the physical fitness side when there's some studs that are getting after it. I wanted to be able to lead by example, and everybody spits that out. But you got to, I think it's an important thing of leadership for you to be able to do what you expect of others. And so I think it began with that stuff. On the gun side, it was never satisfied with where the team was shooting. As you said, you know, the qualification course isn't necessarily a, you know, a magic checkbox that's going to guarantee you your life in the in a gunfight. But if your qualification standard is very difficult, then I think it does help drive dudes training. So if I make an easy qual course, then potentially that opens up time when they get the time to train guns. That if it's super simple, then they know they don't have to work as hard. Does that make sense? So now yeah. They're going to spend an hour and a half at lunch. Now they're going to take a break here and there. Now they're going to spend more time yucking it up and telling war stories and clowning around and versus getting after the guns. And so my deal was that we're going to change this qual course every single year because I didn't want guys to get comfortable shooting a course. I wanted them to get good, which means any course that I give them should be a cakewalk, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're shooting really, really well, then no matter what I give you for a qualification standard should fall. And that's always kind of been my philosophy. So, and I, you know, again, fortunate to work with a bunch of dudes, the firearms group on the SWAT team, we all pushed each other to get the team better. And I've had some really, really talented guys with the guns, both as peers and as subordinates, and in some cases as my superiors that got it, man. The close calls over the years on SWAT, the close calls in patrol, and I'm not talking about for me, I'm talking about for the dudes.
Hold that thought, too. Because okay. we got to go to break again, but we're talking with Bill Blauer. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment also brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it, but how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it, and that's where Surefire comes in. From the new 1200 lumen EDCL 2T handheld or 500 lumen EDCL 1T handheld to the 1000 lumen XH35 or the brand new upgraded out now with 1000 lumens X300 fits in your old X300 holsters. Surefire can make sure you never have to yell "Aziz light" ever again. Surefire, the professional choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Remember, if you listen to Ballistic Radio, you can get 20% off everything at the surefire.com web store by entering the discount code Aziz Light, AZIZLIGHE, no space. And when I say everything, I mean everything except batteries and suppressors. But we're talking with Bill Blauers, who's like, wait, upgraded X300. And then he magically remembers that this isn't actually airing until August. And the light's been out for a couple of weeks now. And isn't that cool how that works?
That is cool. Yeah. Now I know. That's cool.
So you were saying the close calls on patrol and SWAT, and then I interrupted you again. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I'll use an example here, and I like mentioning this one because he's dead now, and that's Mark Reniger, who was one of the Lakewood Four, but he was on my team for a while. He worked for an organization here, and then he lateraled down to Lakewood Police Department. But I remember Mark was my ATL for a little bit, and we were working on a barricaded subject, and this was a DV related call. Excuse me. But we get to the end of this, and it's an issue. This rival patrol had sat on this dude for a long time. We weren't sure if he was home or not. There was a delayed response with patrol to get there, not their own fault, just kind of the way the call worked out. But there was a gap in time where potentially the bad guy could have escaped, right? There was the containment was weak for a little bit. And so we're working through this problem. And we end up at the attic hatch, and it doesn't look like maybe he's gotten up there, but you never know. And we got to clear the whole house, including the attic space, blah, blah, blah. So we pop the hatch, use our pole camera to look up in there and do some stuff. But eventually you got to commit men to the space. I mean, that's just all there is to it, right?
Right.
And I remember, you know, calling the TLs, my ATLs together, and I said, hey, dudes, how do the hell we want to attack this thing, right? How do we want to get this one done? And there was, like always, you know, some crap about, well, you know, the dude probably hauled. You know, the dude probably blasted out. He probably ain't here, you know. And I always try to count it and go, he is here, dude. We just haven't found him yet, right? Trying to get make sure the mindset is right. But to be honest, I was thinking the same thing, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't verbalized, but I was thinking, hey, he's probably gone. And so ultimately, I said, hey, man, we got to put guys in the attic. That's the last step. That's what we're at. Let's do it. And I remember looked at Mark and thought, I don't like it, man. I don't want to put a guy up in that hole. And he goes, well, somebody's got to do it. And you know, I said, okay, well, who's going to do it? Mark said, I'll do it. And he steps up on the ladder, and he's initially just doing the normal, you know, hey, police, come out, show us your hands, just kind of, you know, talking to the space. And then all of a sudden his voice changes, and you can't duplicate it. But I remember him yelling, let me see your hands, let me see your hands. And, you know, just the way that his voice went up in octave and the yep. urgency and all of that stuff. I mean, he's clearly talking to somebody at this point. And the guy had burrowed, he's a skinny fella. He had burrowed himself into the insulation, and he's literally 4 feet away from Mark. So he sits up with gun in hand, pointing at Mark. Mark gives him those verbal commands. And then Mark ends up having to shoot the guy. And it was a sucky feeling to be at the bottom of the ladder and watch this guy fighting for his life. And there's nothing you can do to support him. You know what I mean? There's no room. So you're just watching. And weird crap. Those, you know, I remember hearing the shots at the pace that he fired him. But his slide, for some reason, was in slow motion. And that's some weird crap.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so anyways.
The psychologists would call that tachypsychia. So
yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, all of this, you are sorry, I really got a bad mouth, man. My bad.
It's okay. Hey, so Pat Rogers was on the show twice, managed not to drop an F-bomb once. And if you knew Pat, you know, like, what an accomplishment that was. So, but anyway, continue.
So, anyway, Mark wins the day, thank goodness. And the bad guy ends up losing his life as a result. But that, you start to look at those things, right? And I mean, I know Mark's spouse, really good guy. He's not just a mate, he's a friend. And you, you know, your decisions are potentially, well, in this case, they were life-ending decisions for the bad guy. But he's the guy that ultimately decided that. Does that make
right.
sense?
Yeah.
Mark potentially being shot off that ladder could have been a direct result of my decision to put him up on the ladder.
Right.
And so you look at that, and if that doesn't drive you to try to, you know, force excellence across the board, then I don't know what does. I do think Mark won that fight as a direct result of the gun standards that we had put in place on the team at that point. I guess the culture and of fighting spirit and, you know, all of the stuff that we were doing to try and make ourselves be the best SWAT team on the planet, I think helped him achieve victory that day, if that makes any sense. You know, and I'm saying that because the SWAT designation is not a national standard, right? It's just an acronym. And
right.
so some teams, I think, take it less serious than others, and that could be a result of op tempo or lack of command support. You know, and a SWAT guy, if I, you know, magically plucked 10 from around the country just randomly, some of those dudes may not have survived that encounter because they lack the requisite skills to accomplish the task at that moment in time. And when you start thinking about that stuff and not knowing what that moment in time is going to entail or detail, then all of a sudden that drives you to really work hard on the excellence side of things. Did that make any dang sense? Or
no, it does. And let me ask you this. It seems like a lot of the dudes that I talk to and maybe even some of the trainers, like even some of the well-known trainers, we know that most of the dudes that we run into suck, and whether we talk about it or not, there's kind of like this feeling that, well, as long as I suck less than the other guy, I'm good. But occasionally run into a dude that doesn't suck. You know, and I had Ed Morales on, who's one of the FBI agents in the Miami gunfight, and you look at a dude like Platt. Platt was a bad dude. Like,
right.
And you know, through some sort of weird coin flip, instead of being, you know, any number of dudes I'm friends with that whatever, he ended up being a bad guy. But like, that was it. It was a coin flip. He could have gone either way. And do you think people don't acknowledge that enough?
You know, man, I think that there is potentially, there's a lot of stuff out there where people don't know what they don't know, right? That old saying. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, guys that are, it depends what the instructor wants to do. And then, I mean, I say this all the time, right? The current standards, right? My tiger patch standards for all my firearms classes and anything to do with weapons kind of thing. And I tell guys in front, look, man, these are my standards, right? I'm just allowing you guys to shoot what I personally want to do as a gauge for you. So some, there's absolutely dudes that can burn that crap down. This Colorado class, there were guys that could have passed it, but I failed it again in Colorado, right? So I shoot them with the class, and it's essentially just four drills that I randomly pull for each class, so they change each time. You can't really prep for one of my classes. Well, essentially, you can't prep for one of my classes, just be good at everything. But I tell them that up front. The standards are really, really difficult, man. They're difficult for a reason, because I'm pushing myself to get to a point where I can achieve them on demand all of the time. And I'm not there yet. That's what motivates me to keep working. Yeah. And so I think there's some lack of goals, maybe. I think, you know, a guy goes and, you know, he can hit a C zone on an IFSC target, and then he starts to convince himself that that's good enough. He thinks that his 2.5 second draw is good enough. And maybe it is for, you know, whatever, 80% of the encounters that the guy might find himself in. But there is a hard group out there that that is something different. And if you're not ready for them, then you may lose your life that day. And so I've always thought, man, I need to be the best rifle and pistol shooter on the planet, since I have no idea who my adversary will be.
Right.
I need to be much better than those guys. And I'm not there yet. So I have a lot of work to do. I have a lot of work to do right now to achieve that goal. And it's you know, for me, it's been a lifelong pursuit. The downside is I also have, you know, tactics and a family and other parts of my job that didn't require just shooting, kind of a thing. And so all of that stuff starts to interfere with the goal achievement. You know, I have a limited amount of resources, meaning bullets and time to work on that. So, you know, I can only get as good as I can get.
Right.
And I think that's the thing I try to stress in my classes now, you know, cops and citizens, because so some police departments won't give you unlimited ammunition. So go buy some, dude. Right. Yeah. Instead of buying that new Dodge Ram, go get yourself some bullets, because it's an important thing to keep you coming home every day. On the citizen side, man, be smart, right? Don't put yourself in positions where that gun even has to come out, but be ready to do it and do the best you can with what you have.
Right.
You know, that kind of a thing. And so, I mean, I don't, you know, everybody asks, well, what's prerequisites for your class? Well, hold that thought.
Hold that thought, and then you can tell us when we get back. We're talking with Bill Blowers. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. So we're talking with Bill Blowers. You were saying right before the break, Bill, people ask you, what's the prerequisite for class? And go.
How long this takes you to do it, but if it's on handgun, you should be able to draw your pistol from wherever you carry it safely, however that's done, I don't care. And you should be able to hit a 3x5 card at 7 yards on demand with no time pressure.
Yeah.
Easy day.
Yep.
Right. I mean, it's a pretty easy day. So it is definitely not a beginner's class. It's not a class where you know, go buy your gun and then arrive. And if you can't do that simple prerequisite, then you will probably get frustrated and some other things in the class. I mean, it's meant to be, it's not meant to be a brand new shooter's class.
Yeah.
And a chunk of that too is I don't spend a ton of time on basic fundamentals. I mean, we talk about it obviously, but it's not, you know, I'm trying to push, you should be past that already. So that we can refine those skills. And I use a lot of sports analogies and junk within my training. And I talk about, hey man, you know, so, if, you know, I coach my kids little league, I played baseball my whole life, basically. And so when I was teaching the little kids to hit off of a tee,
I'm trying to imagine, I'm sorry to interrupt, Bill. I'm trying to imagine you as a little league coach. And like
undefeated, champ. We were undefeated, bro.
I bet so. I bet so.
I was gonna say, like, I feel like this is very intense little league.
I'm kind of terrified and slightly aroused at the same time. It's like prom all over again.
What's the age limit? Should I come and, you know?
Yeah, undefeated. The champions, man. We were those little kids got after it.
I bet so. anyway, continue.
So excuse me. You know, when the kids would come up and they're just learning how to swing a bat and hit off a tee, it's the same speech. Put your feet basically shoulder width apart, right? Stand in a balanced position. Hold the bat like this. You know, keep your eye on the prize. Follow through. Roll your wrist. Blah, 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 right? Whatever the heck all the fundamentals of hitting a ball off of a tee. And that doesn't change. You know, here comes the tall, skinny kid. And here comes the short, fat kid. And here comes the, you know, the bulkier kid, whatever the heck. And it's the same speech. So they all get some basic success and drive on. And so that is the foundation of hitting a baseball. But if you look at the major leagues, right, the top level of the game, all nine batters coming to the plate look very, very different, right? They're all, they have taken that foundation and maximized it for their physique, their natural ability, their natural affinity, and also for what they're trying to do, right? Whether they're a place hitter, a power hitter, whatever the case might be. And so we need the base knowledge. So go get that first and then come here. And then I'm going to try to turn you into a major league hitter. And that sounds really lofty, but I don't mean it to be like that. I'm just saying I'm going to take what you already do well and let's work on that and refine it so that you are performing the best you can based on your body mechanics, you know, the type of gun that you've selected, the gear that you have to use, you know, that type of thing. Does that make any sense?
No, it does. You know, and I
– I mean, I get it. Coming out of a level 8 security holster concealed, sorry, dude, you will never be as fast as me on the draw coming out of an exposed tack holster, ALS only.
Right.
But worrying about the time, match me on the accuracy piece. You following me here with that line of thought?
Yeah, no, and it's something that, you know, so I could bring up some dudes that you might know, some of them you might not, but like, you know, I've shot with Ernie Langdon and Gabe White and Spencer Keepers and a guy named Kirk Clark, who's one of the better shooters that I've ever seen as far as like in the Timmy community. So, and Ernie's a former gamer, but I'd say he's more in the Timmy community now. And we've all shot against each other, and we're all close enough that on any given day, one of us could beat the other one. But it's interesting right. to see where we catch time on each other and, like, who does what part or what piece different and how it's different. So, yeah, that makes sense to me. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah, man. We're in the last segment, and we got some time still, but it's gonna be quick. But what would you tell people? I know we can't like give salience to this. We can't, you know, you can lead the horse to water, but you can't make it drink. But what would you say to like get people to really maybe consider at least taking this more seriously?
Well, why are you doing it? Right. And when I say doing it, I'm assuming we're talking about just firearms training or shooting in general. And so, if you're shooting for competition, then obviously take it more serious, right, and work harder at it so that you can win competition if that's the objective that you're trying to achieve, right? If it's defensive-based shooting, you know, then I think that my thought process is pretty sound where I don't know who the adversary is going to be, so I got to be better than everybody.
Yep.
The good news is most criminals are not very good, right? That's both a good thing and a bad thing. So if you get yourself to a decent level of shooting, and all aspects of shooting, right? The draw, the manipulations, and also putting the bullet where it absolutely needs to go. Then you'll likely prevail, right? Even on the civilian side, though, I think there's some tactics involved, right? There's just being smart in the way you carry yourself and paying attention without looking like a double knot spy. You know what I mean? You're not James Bond, dude. You don't need to, you know, be ridiculous about a lot of junk. But just be aware, man, be aware of what you're doing and start to live that lifestyle. It's habit forming, right? So if you do it enough, all of a sudden you're doing it without thinking about it, kind of like driving to the grocery store. You don't think about gas, brake, that it just happens. And so getting to that unconscious competence level of training, is what you need to do. And then, you know, I it seems like there's a lot. I mean, guy, I'm good being conscious. Hey man, can I come to your basic SWAT class? And I always, you know, it's not that there's super secret information in there or any of that kind of junk, but my question is, why do you want to come, dude? You frame houses for a living and shoot on the side, and your focus is defensive shooting, not competition. But where's your SWAT team at? Is that hiding in your closet? And when you need them, they're going to pop out and help you in your problem. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
There's no need. So you're spinning your wheels towards something that is not going to happen. And I think it's maybe just human nature to want to do. And maybe some of the, you know, I'm saying you can't do it, so now you want to do it kind of a thing. I don't know, man. So I guess focus on it. I mean, my thought, since I retired in February, my thought process has started to change a little bit, you know, about what I'm doing and how and why. Starting to think a little bit more about, you know, I was obviously always thinking about it for me and what my philosophy was personally for me and my family's safety. But I guess trying to put that into thoughts and words and maybe, you know, start to go down the path that I've learned from responding to a bunch of street robberies, you know, raids, home invasion robberies, that kind of a thing, and looking at what were the mistakes made there and how did this happen and what could I do to help a good American prepare for that type of thing. But I think people could do that well. I mean, I ask citizens, I've been asking them now since I started alignment, hey, man, what's your house breakdown? You know, how are you going to clear your house? And a lot of time, well, you know, I'm going to pie and I'm going to do, well, no. With specifics, dude, draw me a diagram and show me how you're going to make that happen. And that's not to say those people don't exist, but I haven't encountered the guy yet that can even give me a detailed breakdown of what he's going to do in his own home.
Well,
I can tell you exactly what I'm going to do because I've thought about it for the last 20 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I may have diagrammed my house and points of domination.
Good on you. Well, that's exactly what you should be doing, man.
Yeah, I'm weird though too, though, dude. You know?
Right. So. I don't think you are, man. I spend more minutes and hours in this place than anywhere else. Why wouldn't I have a good defensive plan for it? Why wouldn't I have a good offensive plan for it?
Well, frankly, the stakes are higher. So if the fight is in my house, if the fight is in my house, the stakes are about as high as they can be. If I'm out in public, maybe, you know, hopefully worst case scenario is I lose, which is not acceptable, but it's a little different than I lose and then my family's there.
That's a loss for the whole team.
Yeah, it's like that's unsatisfactory. We got a couple minutes left, dude. If people want to come train with you or come take a class, and you're at the top of my list. I'm going to desperately try to make it to one of your classes sometimes in the next 6 months to a year. So that's a pretty high recommendation for me, right? So if you guys are listening, go train with Bill. If they want to do that, where and how can they find out about that?
So the website, www.tap-rack.com. From the homepage, click the calendar. And then the calendar is set up so that you see what's coming up. You don't see the whole year.
Right.
So you have to scroll it to kind of see where I'm at. I'm also on Facebook, both as Tap-Rack Tactical and my name, Bill Blowers. Those two kind of live together. And Instagram. So I'm trying to push the information out in as many medias as I can. And then, of course, local to you. I'm assuming ranges and other things are also posting that information out. Or you can just shoot me a PM, dude, if you're, you know, wherever the heck you are at. Shoot me a message on Facebook and say, hey, man, are you coming to my area? And then I can look at my big calendar hanging in my office and say, hey, this is as close as I'm getting to you and let you make a decision. And then the other thing, man, is I'm always looking for course hosts, right? So if you're a guy that has a club or something on the shooting side of things, man, get a hold of me. And if you want to host the class, it's pretty easy to do. There's no expenses, no nothing, kind of a thing. And we just kind of work through the bugs of what you'll provide, what I provide, and then we get it done. That usually entails free training for the host guy that sets it up. So if you want a free class and you got a range that we can do it at, let's do it, man. And I'm Spartan. I don't need much to make the class happen.
Nice. Bill, I appreciate you taking time out of your morning, dude, very much.
I absolutely appreciate you having me on the show, dude. I've been a fan for a little bit, so it's really, really, really crazy right now for me to even think I'm on the, not that you're Tom Cruise, for Christ's sake.
Well, yeah, please. Like I said, 6 years of just filling up those 42 minutes. But hey, dude, I appreciate it. Be safe, all right?
All right, thanks, man.
All right. Hey, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio, and keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. It helps us out. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week. Don't run away.